This is the Senate Committee on Judiciary. We're meeting on June 16, 1987 at 3 o'clock p.m. in Hearing Room 343. This will be a public hearing on House Bills 2180, 2306, 2323, 2326, and 2844, and a work session on HCR 10, Senate Bills 313, 314, 315, and House Bills 2384, 2522, 2557, 2718, 2724, 2734, 3345, and 3059.
Judiciary Committee will come to order. We'll go into work session on House Concurrent Resolution 10. Chair moves it to the floor. Do pass. That's the one that
Bicentennial
observation. Any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Brenneman?
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Hamby?
Aye.
Aye. Carries. We're going to work session, House Bill 2522.
Mr. Chairman, that is the bill which expands the jurisdiction of small claims departments from $1,500 to $2,500. The amendment to the fee provision in section 6 can be deleted because it's been taken care of with House amendments to Senate Bill 866. And there are amendments in your file which clarify when a person gets a prevailing party fee in the small claims department and how much it is.
So there are two proposed amendments?
Yes. The first one is not written anywhere. We were able to do it only because of the concurrence.
Well, give me the
other one is the dash two amendments.
Well, give me the line and page number of the first one.
Okay. Page 4.
And 37.
Line 37 through line 13 on page 5.
I'll move the deletion.
That's the deletion of section of the deletion of section 6.
Correct.
Yes.
All right. Senator Hamby moves the deletion of section 6. Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chairman,
second amendment is what?
Dash 2. I'd move the dash 2.
Senator Brenneman, did you?
Yes.
All right. Moves the dash 2 amendment. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Move the bill.
Move the bill. Then Senator Hamby moves House Bill 2522 as amended to the floor. Do pass. Discussion.
Yep.
Call the roll, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Carries. Work session on House Bill 2724.
House Bill 2724 is the one that would give immunity to a witness before the legislature, and it's my understanding that the chairman wants to delete the section providing for attorney fees, which is section 2 of the bill.
That's the chair's
move. Sub 2.
Sub 2, I'm sorry.
Deletion, Mr. Chair.
That's lines
10
to
12. All right, Senator Hamby moves the deletions of lines 10 through 12, House Bill 2724. Any objection to that? So ordered. Senator Cohen moves House Bill 2724 as amended to the floor. Do pass. Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Hamby?
Aye.
Aye.
Myers?
Aye. We'll now go into public hearing on House Bill 2323.
Chairman, House Bill 2323 deals with recording statutes for interests in real property, and I have a preliminary staff measure analysis, which I will hand down for anybody who's interested.
All right, we have three witnesses. Charles Stern, please.
Charles Stern, Yamhill County Clerk, Chairman of the Oregon Association of County Clerks Legislative Committee, reside at 19450 Canyon Road, Sheridan, Oregon. The Oregon County Clerks Association worked with the Oregon Land Title Association in the development of the original bill that was presented in the House, and we had two goals with which we worked. The first goal was an effort to standardize the recording fees throughout the state. Our second goal was to create a single record for constructive notice of real property transactions. I feel this is an important benefit to the public. There are various professional organizations like the Land Title, the banking industry, that know they need to search many different records, but the common public is not aware that when they come in the clerk's office and they see there are no liens against the property, that there are other records which may truly contain liens. And so we supported this bill, and we urge your support of this bill. This bill, as you see it now, is a compromise. In the House, there were several organizations which opposed certain portions of the bill, and this is a compromise bill from that. The gentleman from the Land Title Association, I think, will be going through section by section with you as you desire. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Well, I regret that that very nice Latin phrase, lis pennens, is going to be removed from the statute. I always thought that was a dandy expression. Senator Brockman, or Brenneman, did you want any explanation of that?
Well, go ahead.
Latin phrase.
I did have a year of high school Latin, incidentally.
Okay.
But that's one that probably didn't come up when I was taking that.
All right. Any questions of Mr. Stern? Okay, Mr. Stern, thank you. Now, I've got Michael Magnus from the Oregon Land Title Association and Kim Worrell from the Yamhill County Assessor's Office is also here, I believe. Okay, well, come on, both of you, come on up. Mr. Worrell, are you here to testify in favor of this bill, or do you have some questions, or what?
Mr. Chairman, mixed emotions.
All right, well, why don't you go ahead and you give us your testimony first before we hear from Mr. Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Kim Worrell, Yamhill County Assessor, representing the State Assessors Association. The assessors strongly favored the original bill with the idea that all of the records regarding property ownerships would be in one central place. I guess probably the problem that we have is that annually, instead of just checking deed and mortgages, which we get a copy of regularly on a weekly basis from the county clerk, we annually have to go to the circuit court records and hand search every probate and divorce case to find out whether there was a transfer of property, and if so, to whom it was transferred, and then try to determine addresses. Some of the counties do not even do that. That any records that are in the circuit court records, or state court records as they're called now, are not a matter of public record as far as the assessor is concerned, and those property transfers do not take place in the assessor's office unless the prevailing party comes in and requests it and shows the documentation. If they were required to be recorded in the county clerk's lien record, or in the transfer records, we'd automatically get a copy of it, and the transfers of titles of property would take place in a regular manner. And our hope was that all transfer of ownerships had to be recorded in county clerk's records. So basically, that's our statement.
So you don't mind the bill in its amended form, but you prefer it in the original form, is that
Mr.
it?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Uh-huh. All right, why don't you just stay right there a minute.
Okay.
Let's. Mr. Magnus, do you have any response, or do you have any disagreement or agreement with Mr. Worrell's comments?
My name is Michael Magnus. I'm with the Oregon Land Title Association, and I'm Vice President, General Counsel of Oregon Title Insurance Company. Insofar as his comments are concerned, the Land Title Association would prefer the type of legislation that he just described, where everything would be recorded in a single public depository. However, there are various interests in the state that have a disagreement with that position, and as a result, the A Engross bill that's now before your committee is a compromise of the input of many parties that are concerned about this type of legislation. And as a result, the bill in its present form is what is acceptable to the concerned interests. And so, what we're here to present is obviously a bill that we feel is something that is workable given the present status of the law, and will certainly move towards the type of legislation that the assessor's offices are urging.
Senator Cohen.
Everybody talks mysteriously about the concerned interests here, and I guess I'd like you to just list them in the line, you know, in some order of who the concerned interests are.
Well, obviously, the Oregon State Bar, anytime you're changing the manner in which you create liens against real property, the Oregon State Bar is going to have a certain amount of interest in what type of legislation you're promulgating. And the debtor-creditor section of the Oregon State Bar took a no position, and the real estate and land use section of the Oregon State Bar took a support position. The cities, the League of Oregon Cities took a no opposition. The State Court Administrator's Office took a no position. And the DA's Association of the State of Oregon took a no position. And obviously the County Clerk Association took a support position, as does the Oregon Land Title Association. If I've omitted anyway, it's due to lack of memory as opposed to trying to skirt around somebody that might not have been, you know, that I don't, you know, I'm just not aware of right now.
Sounds like there's something in this bill for everybody then. Any questions? All right. Yes. Go ahead.
If I make one comment, I have submitted to the committee members a summary of the House Bill 2323 that sort of outlines in general the types of things that are being accomplished by the bill. And obviously, I'd like that put into the record so that in the future, if there's any search on the legislative history by the courts, that they'll have some recognition of what we're attempting to accomplish with the bill.
Now, we still have to transcribe judgments from district court to circuit court to make a lien on real property.
Yes, there's no change in that respect. In the county of original entry, district court judgments will be transcribed from the district court to the circuit court.
You mean automatically?
No, that's something for the creditor to do,
yeah, okay.
Just like it is under the present system.
Yeah, all right.
We've only eliminated transcribing to the extent that it's not the county of original entry. So they'll be recording in all other counties in order to create liens.
All right, now let's see if I understand that correctly. You've got a district court judgment in Yamhill County, and mm-hmm. You want to make it a lien on property in Clackamas County, so what do?
You record in Clackamas County.
You record the district court judgment?
That's correct.
In other words, you don't have to transcribe the thing to the Yamhill County Circuit Court before you can get it into the Clackamas County records, is that right? Or do you? That's the way we do it now.
Yes.
We have to take it from district court in Yamhill County to the circuit court, and then we flip it over to Clackamas County. Still have to do that, is that right?
Well, it's a little more complicated than that. If I may go back a step, you can go ahead and simply record your judgment from Yamhill County into Clackamas County to create the lien. The problem that you would face would be the ability to issue execution upon the real property of the judgment debtor. And that requires, as it does under present law, the transcribing of that district court judgment into the circuit court in Yamhill County. So you still would need to do the transcribing for execution purposes, but not for purposes of creating the lien.
So a district court judgment creates a lien on property without anything further?
So long as you record it in a county where it is not originally entered. In order to get a lien in Yamhill County, in your example, you would need to transcribe to circuit court, just like it is under the present system.
No one really understands why we have that funny procedure. If you can transcribe a Yamhill County District Court judgment into Clackamas County and make it a lien on real property, why don't we have a Yamhill County District Court judgment as an automatic lien on real property in Yamhill County? I've never figured that out. This doesn't do anything.
I would imagine that the legislature, in their infinite wisdom, decided that that was the way our system ought to be established. I don't really know the historical basis of that.
Any other questions?
Chairman, if I could.
Yes, counsel.
Does this system cover things like construction liens and other interests or about to be interests in property?
We do not, under this bill, at all address construction liens in any way, shape, fashion, or otherwise. We do not touch, in fact, Chapter 87 in any shape, fashion, or otherwise under this piece of legislation. To answer Senator Cohen's question further, the material laborman also had were interested in this bill, but when they realized we were not in any way touching Chapter 87, they also took a no position vote on it too. So.
Any other questions? Okay, and I think that's all the witnesses we had too on that. I'll accept the motion on this bill. All right, Senator Cohen moves House Bill 2323 to the floor. Do pass. Further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. Now, we'll go into a public hearing on House Bill 2326.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2326 is here at the request of the Oregon State Bar. It deals with how you serve notice and what happens when you declare a default on a land sale contract. I'll pass down a preliminary staff measure analysis again, and I believe there's a witness here from the State Bar to tell you about.
Yeah, we have Chris Gorsuch. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Chris Gorsuch. I'm here representing the Real Estate and Land Use section of the Oregon State Bar Committee on Legislation. I'm also a private practicing attorney in the city of Salem and have used the existing land sale contract forfeiture bill several times and have found there to be a couple deficiencies in it. And when these were discussed with the section, it was decided to put together an amendment to the bill to clarify existing law that appears at ORS 93905. And that came about in 1985, a comprehensive package of legislation relating to forfeitures on land sale contracts. Basically, what that set of measures did was provide a statutory framework for the declaration of forfeitures and make it something like very close to a non-judicial foreclosure of a trust deed. So they track each other. They're not exactly the same because they have different origins and a different historical perspective, but they operate the same way. It starts out with the filing of notice of default. There's a statutory time frame in which cure can be effected, and then a recording of a declaration of forfeiture, which then extinguishes the purchaser's rights in the contract. This bill simply cleans up three primary areas that we've seen problems arise. Number one is the service of notice. What this bill does is it adds personal service. The existing statute simply provides for first-class mail. and certified mail. This amendment adds personal service so that we can make sure that we get the right parties served.
Is that an option now, or a...
Right, it's an optional, served by mail, first class and certified mail, or personal, so it does add an additional method of service. The second thing that it adds that is not existing now is service on the occupants. What was happening a lot of times is that the people who were in the property as tenants or permissible occupants were not notified of the proceeding. And that becomes important when we talk about the possessory rights. The third addition is that it allows for persons who are interested for some reason or another in the status of the title of this property to have recorded a request for notice, and this amendment allows for service of the notice on those persons. That is existing now in the trust deed section of the code, and it could be someone like a lender who knows that the buyer has an interest in this real estate, even though they may not have a direct interest in that contract, can record a request for notice and receive notice of default. The second thing that it does is it provides for the Latin word that you like so well, lease pendens. By the requiring the recording of this notice of default, it then serves as notice to the world that there is a foreclosure proceeding going on. The problem with that was that in the past, without the recording of that lease pendens notice, buyers who were under default may convey or lease the property to a third person who was not aware of the pending proceeding, and then there would be a priority dispute between the seller and this third person. Now that's remedied by the requirement of a lease pendens recording of the notice. The third thing that it does, and a real serious problem that we've seen, is that after the forfeiture took place, there was a question of how do you remove the people that are in possession of the property, either the contract purchaser or some occupant through the purchaser. There were arguments that you could not use a forcible entry and detainer action, and that you had to go back into court and seek an ejectment action, which is another full-blown circuit court trial. That certainly was not the intent of the 1985 Act. This bill would clarify that 10 days after the forfeiture is all completed, 10 days thereafter, the seller could use the forcible entry and detainer remedy to remove parties in possession. And that's why, one of the reasons why we expanded the notice of the default to include parties who have requested notice in the public record and occupants of the property, such that those occupants could be removed by an FED after the termination of the forfeiture, so that they'll have plenty of notice before this happens.
But they couldn't be removed during the pendency of the proceeding.
No, only after the forfeiture becomes operative under law. 10 days thereafter, the creditor could then move for the FED remedy, which requires the filing of an FED complaint, but it's a summary proceeding.
As forfeiture couldn't occur before 30 days, could it?
Oh, no. The time frame of forfeiture as set out in the current bill is not touched. It still remains the 60 and 120-day provision. So we're not shortening up that. And in fact, the section took a negative position on the bill that would have allowed for shortened notice provisions. And I corresponded to this committee on that previous bill. We don't think the notice provision should be shortened.
Questions?
Comment, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Hemby.
I have a little goldenrod form in my folder here, written by my own county council, that states, to my knowledge, no attorney engaged in active municipal law practice supports this bill. Is that still true?
I don't know.
Who wrote that?
Oh, forgive me.
I don't have one of those, and they usually send me one, too.
Forgive me. Wrong bill folder.
Thank you.
It's next.
Thank you. We didn't receive any parties.
Good.
I don't believe that were adverse to this at the House, and it did pass 49-1 in the House chambers.
My apologies. Wrong bill folder.
Thank you.
You know, when the advance sheets come out of the session laws and lawyers start reading through the advance sheets, they think very frequently that a lot of legislatures have been reading the wrong bill folders. Who have voted for something like that. All right. Any other questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
House Bill 2326. Senator Hill will move that to the floor and do pass. Any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Brennan?
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Hamby?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Wires?
Aye. Aye. Carries. Now we'll go to a public hearing on House Bill 2306. And let's hear from the Department of Justice, Mike Reynolds, first on that. Mike Reynolds.
This is the golden line.
Mr. Chairman, Mike Reynolds of the Department of Justice.
Just a minute, Mr. Reynolds. You want to join him? Is that it?
Could I join him,
you
Mr.
Bet.
Chairman?
Sit down there.
I'm Bob Cannon with Marion County.
All right, fine. Now, before you start, counsel, you want to give us an overview of this thing in its present status?
Well,
maybe save a little time here, or do you want the witnesses to go ahead and explain the background on this thing?
Since they are the ones who've been involved, they can probably do about as good a job as I have.
Judge Lindy, did you... Are you anxious to come up here to start with or not? I was going to call you next. Okay. I don't know. I know there's not been too much togetherness on this thing, and it appears that's still the case. Go ahead. Who's first?
Well, Mr. Chairman, with the chairman's permission, I would suggest that since what the committee has before it right now is the minority report that came out of the House Judiciary Committee, that Mr. Cannon... I'll go first to explain to you what the minority report is about, and then perhaps Judge Lindy could come up and talk to you about the original version of House Bill 2306, which is the majority report of the House Judiciary Committee, and then perhaps I could bring up the tail end at that point and offer the Department of Justice's comments concerning.
All right, and I'll tell you what we've got here now, gentlemen. We've got. Who's that third witness there? I can't read.
Rich Rowe.
Okay, Rich. All right.
Rich.
Is it Rodman?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've got Mike Reynolds and Bob Cannon up here, and we've got Rich Rodman from League Oregon Cities, and we have... We have Judges Hans Lindy and Mick Gillette from the Supreme Court, and so what I intend to do is to hear from Mr. Rodman. Come on up here, would you please? I intend to hear from you three in whatever order you want to go in, and then I would ask. The two judges to come up, and let's see if we can't get everybody straightened out on what we're trying to accomplish here. So you go ahead now, whoever's first down there.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Cannon, Marion County Legal Counsel. I am here in support of the minority report, Ian Gross, House Bill 2306. It is the two-page version. Association of Oregon Counties, Oregon County Councils Association of Marion County are opposed to the 61-page version. Speaking on behalf of the Oregon County Councils Association, Marion County, I support the bill for two reasons. First, all local government decisions made in the transaction of local government business shall be reviewable by one procedure under existing law, i.e., a writ of review under ORS Chapter 34. The bill also allows for the transfer of cases, and this would be appeals, between LUBA and Circuit Court and vice versa, should there be a dispute as to whether LUBA or Circuit Court has or is the appropriate forum, then the Court of Appeals would determine whether or not it is or is not a land use decision, and therefore whether it goes to Circuit Court or LUBA. This is a very simplified version of what we presented to you in 1985. It passed the House of Representatives 1985, but through the passage of time and the crux of time in 1985, it was not able to be passed. This bill comes to you on a 51-1 vote from the House. It is the minority report. What you have before you is two pages, and it's very important. It provides, first, a definition of municipal corporation. We took the definition directly out of municipal audit law statutes. It is a very broad definition. It includes all municipal corporations and all associations which are created between municipal government corporations under Chapter 190. It also provides a means of review of quasi and quasi-judicial actions of local government in the transaction of local government business. This is the review which is presently provided for under writ of review. The second half of the problem is transferability. In many cases, it is unable to determine. We are unable to determine, even though we deal with land use decisions all the time, whether it is a land use decision in local government or whether it is not a land use decision. The vacation of a road, for example, is that a land use decision or is it not? It's up in the air. And those types of cases go all the way to the Oregon Supreme Court. This process allows for the transfer of cases. If the litigant believes that it is a land use decision, they file with LUBA. If LUBA determines that it's not a land use decision, LUBA has the authority under this proposed bill to transfer it to circuit court.